Okay, we're beginning with the Mishnah on the top of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. Ra'utan Ratzim. He sees them running Achar Mitziah, Achar Tzvi Shavur, Achar Gozlot Shelo Perchu. They're running after something like a Tzvi Shavur. He's somehow incapacitated this deer, so he can't run at full speed, which means that you could catch up with him. You actually could grab him. Or Gozlot Shelo Perchu, young birds that don't have the ability to fly away. They can waddle, but they can't really fly away. V'amar zachta li sadai. And he says, my field will take possession of them on my behalf. So the owner of the field is watching these people chase it down. And he says, you know what? My field will take care of this. I can acquire it before they grab a hold of it. He says, zachta li sadai, that my field should work on my behalf to acquire the item. Zachta lo, he is successful at acquiring it. Now, Tosfot over here already asks, Nira, de'af agav de'lo amar zachtali, zachtalo. Tosfot says, why does he have to say zachtali sadai? We just said yesterday, with regards to the Dalet Amot, the Gemara said, well, he didn't say ikne. He didn't say it should acquire on my behalf. The Gemara says, why does it matter? The Chachamim instituted the Kinyan one should work, irrespective of whether he says ikne, whether he actually articulates his desire to acquire something. So Tosfot says the same thing over here. He doesn't have to articulate it. It's something that happens automatically. Just like by the Dalet Amot, the Rabbanim were mitakin that it works, and it works irrespective of what you say. So to over here, it should work irrespective of what you say. Tosafot brings from Gemara, the Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, Chatzer shel adam konelo shelo midato, that a chatzer of a person can be acquired even without his knowledge. So without his knowledge, it means that obviously he doesn't have to say zachta li sadai, that my field works on my behalf, because if it's done without your knowledge, it should be able to work without any prompting. We would assume that it has to be a chatzer mishtameret somehow, that it's functioning on his behalf without him declaring that he wants the field to acquire it on his behalf. That's the Dada Tosfot. You can already see in the Aleph that the Gra quotes over here. It says, Nir and I, by Rambam, Michalik, ben Dalet Amot, v'chatzer mishtameret, v'chatzer sheinu mishtameret. There are ways to distinguish between these cases or these situations. One of them is simply that Arba Amot is a takana de Rabbanan. There, the Rabbanan are mitakein that it works irrespective of what you say. On the other hand, when it comes to a chatzer, you need to declare that you want the chatzer to work on your behalf. You need to say, zachta li. That's one way to deal with it. Another way to deal with it is to say over here, he's trying to inform the other parties that he's actually taking possession of it. Don't bother chasing it anymore because I just acquired it through an acquisition through my chatzer. So that's another possibility of distinguishing over here, that he's telling them back off because my sadeh took possession of it. Or you could argue over here that it's not as quote-unquote obvious that his sadeh should take possession of it unless he makes a declaration that his sadeh should act on his behalf. Versus the Dalet Amot, which are something that are your sphere around you that exist at all times. Since they exist at all times, they can acquire for you without any declaration. Versus your Sedeh, which we're going to see, might require other pieces to make it work in instances. Hayat Svi Rats Kedarko. Now then, if you're dealing with a deer that is running without any incapacity, oh, Shayu Gozlot Mafrichim, or these are birds that can take flight, Vamar Zachtali Sadai, then he says, my field should take possession of it. Lo amar klum. That fails over here because he can't catch them, basically. They will run away from them. It's not that he, even if he wanted to, could catch up with them. They would take off. They're not going to stay in this situation. Rashi notes over here that these items would be mishtamer betoch hazadeh im lo yitlu acherim. That the status of the animals here that either couldn't fly or were incapacitated in some way, they would be stuck in the field if it were not for these third parties who are trying to pick them up and take them out. So that's why you have two things here. Seemingly a chatzer mishtameret, plus you have him declaring that he wants the sadeh to work on his behalf. And that seems to be, according to Rashi, why it is successful over here. So now, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, v'hu shomeid b'tzad sadehu. So now they throw a monkey wrench into this whole situation, which is, they say this is only true that if he's standing by his field. So if he's standing by his field, it works. Without standing by his field, it doesn't work. And as Rashi notes over here, that his standing by the field makes it into a chatzer hamishtameret. which seemingly is a requirement or a basic requirement that your possessions can acquire on your behalf. Your chatzir can acquire on your behalf only if it is mishtameret, meaning that the object that is in there is protected somehow or prevented from escaping from your chatzir. So you can accomplish that in one of two ways. You can either have that the field has a walls around it or a fence around it, and so it can be mishtameret by itself. Or the other way is for you actually to be present there to ensure that your field is guarded or protected. So from here, it sounds like the situation is where he's standing by the field, and so that makes it, or seemingly makes it, into a chatzer mishtameret now. The tikne le sadeu, why doesn't his field work to acquire for him without him being there? What is his presence doing that enhances the situation that its field or the chatzer can't do without him? Dam Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, chatzer shel adam konoleu shelo midato. Person's field or chatzer can acquire for him even without his knowledge, even without his being present. So then why is there a demand here that be present? It says, hanimile b'chatzer mishtameret. That's talking about a field that is self-guarded, self-protected. Aval chatzer she'ena mishtameret, when it comes to a field that doesn't have that natural protection associated with it, or it is a protected area, iyo made b'tzad zedeo in, ilo lo. If he's standing by the field, yes. If he's not standing by the field, no. So this is what we articulated before, which is that one of the requirements for your chatzer to acquire on your behalf is that it's mishtameret. You can accomplish mishtameret in two different ways. The field can be naturally mishtameret, which means that the circumstances or the nature of the field could be that it is protected, whether that means that it's naturally, topography-wise, it's a protected area, whether you put up a fence, whether it is guarded by some cameras, dogs, whatever it is, that creates protection. Or the other option is that the field is not protected in any way, but your presence protects the field because you're there to see what's happening, to oversee the situation. So those are the two ways to create Mishnah merit. And what Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying is that our Mishnah requires that you be standing there in order to make it into a chatzer ha-mishtah merit. That's what it seems from the Gemara now. Manat Emra, the chatzer she'ena mishtah merit, where can I show you or prove to you the fact that a chatzer she'ena mishtah merit, that a chatzer that is not protected, il made b'tzad zedeo in, it only works when he's standing there to make it into mishtah merit, ilo lo. But if he's not there, then it doesn't work. The chatzer is not mishtah merit because it doesn't have that status, and your lack of being there means that it never gains that status. How can I prove to you that a chatzer she'ena mishtah merit, you can overcome that deficit by you standing there? D'tanya, hayom eid ba'ir, he's standing in the city, or he's in the city, v'omer, yodeani she'omer she'esh li b'sadeh, I have this pile of grain in the field, po'alim shachachua, the po'alim forgot about it, lo yehi shechacha, I don't want it to be shechacha, yocho lo yehi shechacha, you would think that he's successful now at preventing it from becoming shechacha, tamalomar, v'shachachta omer basadeh, that you forgot the pile, you forgot the bundle in the field, basadeh v'shachachta, when it's in the field and you forgot about it, v'lo ba'ir, and not in the city. The Gemara is going to discuss the Braita, but just as background, when it comes to shechacha, one of the matnot aniyim is shechacha. Shechacha means to forget. Means that you've passed by something when you're harvesting the field. You harvest the field and you forget a section of the field. You forget something along the way that you're harvesting. That becomes shechacha. The rules of shechacha, again we'll see them again here, is that shechacha is only when you would have to go back in order to deal with the item. If it's still in front of you, it's not shechacha. Because by nature or by design, you're going to get there and you won't forget about it because you're going to get there. If you're going back and forth in the field, and when you return on the way back, you can still reach those items. That's also not shechacha because when you return, you're going to see it. It's going to be a part or it's within arm's reach of where you're going to be. Shechacha is a case where you passed it by and you're not going to end up going back there unless you intentionally make an effort to go back there, but you've forgotten about it. That's called shechacha. There's another shechacha which is even not in the process of the harvest, but after you've harvested and you've made the bundles or the piles in the field, that you forget about something in the field. So there again, if it's a significant size, or there's something unique about it, then the person won't forget it because it's as if it's got a reminder in it. So if that has a reminder, then it's not shechicha. On the other hand, if it's in the field and he has these piles here and then he brings in the piles and he forgets about one of those piles in the field, that's also shechicha. He forgets about the bundle in the field. That's shechicha. Now, he has workers that are working for him. The workers that are working for him, they can cause a problem of shechicha because they work and then they forget about someday they leave something in the field. But he can in some way override them because he is the owner of the field. If he doesn't forget about it, then the item is not shechicha. So that's the circumstance of the situation over here, which is he knows that the Paulim forgot about it, but he still remembers that it's there. So he's trying to block this from becoming shechicha by declaring that I remember. And since I remember it, it shouldn't be shechicha. The Balei HaTosafot note over here that when it means that he says, I remember it and I know that it's there, it has to be already after the Paulim have forgotten about it. I mean that if he makes that declaration before the Paulim forget about it, then you'll never have shechicha, because you always make, before anybody forgets anything, you say, oh, I'm remembering everything, there's no shechicha here. That doesn't work. The point is that he remembers it after the Paulim have already forgotten about it, so he's preventing it from becoming shechicha. So that's the nature of what's going on in the Braita. The Gemara here is going to deal with what's the difference between being in the field versus being in the city, and what exactly the scenario is, but that's just a broader background as to the nature of shechicha. Mar says, Hagufa kasho. The Braita is internally inconsistent. Amarat yecholo yehi shechicha. You say, maybe it shouldn't be shechicha. Alma havi shechicha. The fact that you pose the question in this nature and this form indicates that you believe that it is shechicha. You would think it's not shechicha, which means that what it really is shechicha. V'nasiv la gemara b'sadeh v'shechachta v'lo be'ir. But then the Braita brings a pasuk that says that, well, forgetting in the field is forgetting and not in the city, which makes it sound like only when you forget when you're in the field does it matter, but if you don't forget in the city, it's okay. Amalovi shechicha makes it sound like it's not forgetting or it's not considered shechicha. Elalav hachikamar. So now we have to understand the Braita, and this must be the interpretation of the Braita. Obviously, the interpretation now is going to support this idea that there's a difference between you standing by the field and not standing by the field. Basadeh shachuach mi'ikaro abishechacha. In the field, if it's forgotten from the get-go, then that is called forgetting. I mean that if you're still in the field and you forget an item in the field, and the Paulim and the workers have also forgotten about it, that's done. That's shechacha. Zachor ulbasov shachuach ain't shechacha. On the other hand, if you remember about it, and then only later on do you forget about it, then that's not considered to be shechicha. My time, what's the reason? Kevin dekai gaba, since he's present, havilei chatzero v'zachtale. It's his field, and it's zuche on his behalf. So now, what you have here is a case where the Paulim forgot about it, but the Balabait still remembers that it's there. So it's yet to become shechicha. The Paulim have forgotten about it, so it's almost there. But then his field can act on his behalf to acquire it because he remembers that it's there. Later on, he forgets about it. So then technically it should become shechicha because now the Paulim forgot about it and he forgot about it. But in the interim stage, after the Paulim had forgotten about it, he remembers. And his remembering gives him the ability, according to the way that we're explaining the Braita now, to acquire it through his field. Because he's present, he's near his field will acquire it on his behalf, and therefore it's not shechicha. Aval be'ir, if he's in the city, avila zachor ulusov shachoach, in a case where he remembers up front and then forgets later on, havya shechicha. There it will be considered shechicha. My taima, delete gabe, because he's not by the field, deliskele, that it can acquire it on his behalf. The way they're explaining the Braita now is, Paulim forgot about it. Baal still remembers about it. The owner remembers it. But he's going to forget at a certain point. He remembers now, but we know he's going to forget. In the point of time when he remembers, does his field work on his behalf? What we're saying is when he's out by the field, it works on his behalf because then it's a chatzer mishtameret because he's present there. When he's in the city, it fails because, yes, he remembered. But when he remembered, his field can't act on his behalf because it's not a chatzer mishtameret. He's not there. He's not present. He's not with the field. So it lacks that status of chatzer mishtameret, and therefore it cannot acquire the shechicha on his behalf. And that's explanation of the Braita. But in explaining the Braita that way, he makes it clear that there is a distinction between a chatzer when you're standing and you're present versus a chatzer when you're not present. The chatzer when you're present takes on the shame of being mishtameret. It can function on your behalf. When you're not present, your chatzer will not work on your behalf. Mimai, the Gemara says, how do you know that's the case? Dilma gzerat hakatuv hi. Maybe it is a gzerat hakatuv. Gzerat hakatuv means that it's a distinction without reason. You gave a reason for the distinction between sadeh and ir. Maybe there is a distinction between sadeh and ir because of the way that it's formulated in the Torah, but it's a gzerat hakatuv. The pasuk says it. Now Rashi says that the suggestion over here of the Gemara is to emend the Braita. You can see that in Rashi, behoki kamar, yochol yehei shechecha. You would think it is shechecha. Talmud lomar, that it's not shechecha. Our Braita writes the other way around. Our Braita says you would have thought it's not shechecha. Talmud lomar proves that it is shechecha. So Rashi actually emends the Braita based on the question to say we're changing the language of the Braita. That's the nature of the question. The Bali and Tosafot are very uncomfortable with that. And many other Rishonim also agree with the Bali and Tosafot that the Gemara's question is not about the changing the Braita, or changing the language in the Braita, but simply, how do you know that that's what the psukim are coming to teach you? Maybe it's a gzerat hakatuv. Maybe the psukim are telling you a din that has nothing to do with whether you're standing by your field or not standing by your field. How do you know that that's the right interpretation of the psukim? That's the way the question is being formulated according to the Bali and Tosafot. Rashi sees it as being a much more pointed and directed question is, let's fix the Braita to read this way, and then you can claim it's a gzerat hakatuv and not what you're saying. But I suppose to say it's more of an abstract question, which is, how do you know that your interpretation of the psukim is correct here? Maybe it's just simply a gzerat hakatuv. Because the besadeh na'avi shechecha, when you're in the field it is shechecha, ubi'ir lo na'avi shechecha, and when you're in the city, it's not called shechecha. Meaning that the requirement of the pasuk is, v'shachafta omer basadeh. Only when you forget it in the field is that considered to be a shechecha. When you're harvesting and when you're moving along, that's considered to be shechecha. Once you've already left the field and gone to the city and then you forget, that's not called shechecha. Shachachta omer basadeh. Basadeh there is modifying the omer, but the assumption is that you forgot it while the omer was in the field, that you're also present or you're there by the field. So the Gemara suggests, how do you know that that's not the proper interpretation of the psukim? Amar Kra, Pasuk tells you, lo tashuv lekachto, that you may not go back to take it. The rabot, shechachat ha'ir. That includes even if you forgot it in the city. Your inability to go back is not limited or qualified by the word sadeh, but simply you may not go back, no matter where you are. So that already shows you that even when you forget it in the city, that's considered to be shechacha. Hamibayalei, wait a minute. That Pasuk we already utilized for another limud, which is the lav, to teach you that there is a lota seva shechecha, because the shechecha is a statement of shachachta omer basadeh, that when you forget the item in the field, then you have to give it to the aniyim. It's one of the matnot aniyim. But there's no negative restriction, which is don't go and take it. Don't remove the shechecha. Don't take it away. That's what we learn from lota shuv lakachto, which is now you have a lota say, a negative precept that says you may not go back and get it. It says, my lo tashuv, meaning that you could have just said, lo tikachenu, don't take it. What does it mean, lo tashuv, don't go back to take it? The rabot shechachat ha'ir, because that means you've already put distance between you and the field. Tashuv derakachto means that you're going back from the city to go back to place, right? You're somewhere farther away and returning. So I can learn both items out of this pasuk. Bakate mi baile. Wait a minute. We still need that also. Diktan. We have the Mishnah in Peyah that says, Zishafanav ein shechecha. That's what I noted to you before. Anything that's in front of him, it's not deemed to be shechecha. Shachrav yesh shechecha. Anything that's behind him is shechecha. Shu bebal tashuv. Because it says, lo tashuv lekachto. You may not return in order to pick it up. So if you would have to turn back to go get it, that's shechecha. If it's still in front of you, that's not shechecha. Even if you forget about it, it's not forgotten because you just, by going forward, are going to bump into it. You don't have to go back to get it. So as long as you proceed in the way that you're moving right now, in the harvesting process that you are carrying out, then your motion forward will land you where these items are, then that's not called lo tashuv lekachto. You're not going back. You're continuing, and by continuing, you bump into it. So zeh klal, this is the principle. Kol shebu b'bal toshuv shechacha. Anything that is under the restriction of returning, that's called shechacha. Kol she'enu b'bal toshuv, enu shechacha. Anything that does not require you to return, is not restricted by your return, then that's not called shechacha. So that we need lo toshuv l'kachto for. Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Kra, I have a different pasuk to help me with the ear. Iyeh l'rabot shechachat ha'ir. It says, iyeh, it will be shechacha, leger yatom v'almana iyeh, it will be for them. So a lot of times when we say iyeh, means that it persists in this manner. So also over here, iyeh teaches you that it is shechacha, and that won't change. Even if you're in the city, it remains shechacha, and your being in the city does not change the dynamic over here, and it is shechacha. So now, once you've established the fact that shechacha is applicable both in the field and in the city, it doesn't matter where you forget about it, whether you're out in the field and you forget about it, or whether you're at home in the city and you forget about it, that's called shechacha. Once you've established that, now you can go back to the braita. That can't be the explanation or the difference in the psukim between shechachta umr basadeh. What's the uniqueness of the sadeh? The answer in the end is that sadeh has a different status than ear because of the fact that sadeh can't acquire on your behalf. But it only acquire on your behalf when you are present. So when you're in the field, it's not shechacha. When you are in the city, then it is shechacha because when you're in the city, you can't have your field act on your behalf because you're not present. You're not there to make it into a chatzer ha-mishtameret. So the conclusion is that there is such a distinction here in this braita, and that distinction supports the contention of Rav Yehuda ben Shmuel that you have to be standing by the field in order for your field to work on your behalf. Again, the requirement is chatzer mishtameret, that the item is protected or contained somehow over here. That can be done because the field itself is mishtameret, or it can be done because you replace the fence in some sense. You make it mishtameret by your presence. And so therefore, in our Mishnah, it only works on your behalf if it's mishtameret. That mishtameret is created by you being present by the mitziah. Also, in the case of the braita, in the case where the Baalim already forgot about it, the Baal Bayit still remembers, then as long as he remembers, his field will act to acquire it on his behalf. Therefore, if he forgets afterwards, it has no impact. On the other hand, when he's in the city, his Baalim already forgotten about it. He still remembers it. But his field now cannot act on his behalf because he's not present. There's no chatzer mishtameret. So then, when he forgets it in the city, that is shechacha, because he's forgotten, and we just proved that forgetting in the city is called shechacha. And number two is, his field couldn't work. While he remembered it, his field couldn't work on his behalf, because he wasn't present to make it into a chatzer ha-mishtameret. The Gemara says now, v'chein amar ula, v'hu shemeid b'etzad sadehu, ula also corroborates this position or contention of Yehuda ben Shmuel, that he's standing by the sadeh. So here you have a slew of Amoraim that all believe that this idea that your chatzer works on your behalf and acquires on your behalf is only true when you are standing next to the sadeh. Eitavei Rabbi Abba the Ula. So Rabbi Abba asks Sula, Ma'se b'Rabban Gamliel Uzkenim. And this is a Mishnah in Maaser Sheni. It's a Gemara that we already saw in Kiddushin. There's a case that Rabbi Gamliel and the Zekenim, Shayubayim b'Sfina, they were out on a boat, they were traveling. Amar Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel all of a sudden remembers, he's got these produce at home. The way Rashi terms the story or the situation is that he forgot to take off Trumot and Masrot from this before he left. And we know that the Gemara in Beitza and other places points out that there is a chazaka, that a chaver doesn't leave produce without Trumot and Masrot taken off of it. So he's afraid that his family is going to utilize these grains because they're going to assume he's a chaver. He definitely took off Trumot Masrot, but he had forgotten to take it off. So he's trying to rectify the situation when he's not present. That's what Rashi says here. Nizkar shelo yiser masrotav, v'huk shelo, and he was bothered by this. Umer lasran basher husham, and he wants to expeditiously take care of it where he is, because he doesn't want anybody to utilize it. And again, he is a chaver, and the assumption is that a chaver would take care of his produce and would not let anything go mitachat yado, would never leave his presence without it being taken care of. Tosafot over here says, Rashi in Kiddushin is much more explicit there. that his family would rely on him. Says a chaver never lets anything leave his possession without it being fixed. Fixed means truma to masro, taken off of it. That's only true when you have a chaver who passes away. We assume everything he left behind already had truma to masro taken off of it. Or beholeich, when he's leaving town, when he's leaving the place, he makes sure to take care of it beforehand. And he has no intent to return for a long duration. Over here, it seems that they were on a day trip. It wasn't that he was going away for a long distance, wasn't going to return for a long time. If that's the case, then why did he need to take it off? What was he so worried about? Nobody's going to believe that he already took off Trumot Masorot. They know he's coming back, and he'll take care of it when he comes back. Vod lama netnan the Rabbi Yeshua or the Rabbi Akiva. Why is he giving them? We're going to see in a second in the Mishnah from Maaser Sheni. He gives them to individuals. Now, in terms of being mafrish Trumot Masorot, the way that you're mafrish Trumot Masorot is to declare them in the southern side is this Truma, in the northern side is this Maser. Means that you have to actually articulate where the Truma and Maser is. The story in the Mishnah has none of that there. So Tosfot says he thinks that Rashi is wrong about his understanding of this Mishnah. And contextually, the Rabbeinu Tam says, if you go to that perek in Maaser Sheni, it's not talking about Hafrashat Masrot. What it's talking about is Biur Masrot. And that is that the requirement in the fourth year of the Shemitah cycle and in the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle that you remove all Trumot and Masrot that have accumulated over the last 3 years, you have to actually get them out of your possession. It's found in Parshat Ki Tavoh, is otherwise known as the Vidui Maser, that you say at Pesach, Erev Pesach of the fourth year and Erev Pesach of the Shemitah year, once you have removed all those Trumot and Masrot from your possession. So what Tosafot claims, and Rabbeinu Tam says, if you look in the Mishnayot, in Maaser Sheni, as well as the Yerushalmi, that's the way they're interpreting this situation or circumstances, it was towards the end of the Biur Masrot. He needed to remove them from his possession. So he's not trying to be mafrish them, they're already mufrash. They're already separated, but they were still in his possession. He wants to get them out of his possession before the Biur Masrot comes around. And so that's why he's trying to gift them to individuals who can actually take possession of the items. That's the way Tosfot says it. What you're going to have to say on behalf of Rashi is that it's implicit. Implicit in the Mishnah is that if he's giving it to these individuals, that he also was mafrishit, that he was korales shem, and then he was mafrishit. So that's a difference in interpretation about the Mishnah. And now the Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Gamliel, Isur Shani Atid Lamud, that maser, which I'm going to take off in the future, Naton Leoshua, is given to Rabbi Yoshua, Umekomo Muskarlo, and the location is rented out to him, and therefore he will acquire it because of that location. Rabbi Yoshua, according to Rashi, is a Levi. And since he is a Levi, you can accept the Maaser Rishon, because Maaser Rishon goes to the Levi. V'isur acher shani atid lamud, that additional Maaser that I'm going to take off, Naton le'Akiva ben Yosef, is given to Rabbi Akiva, k'desh yisko bo le'aniim, because he's the Gabai of the Aniim, and therefore, he can acquire it on behalf of the Aniim. So again, that would indicate that we are in the third year of the Maaser cycle, or the sixth year of the Maaser cycle, where there's no Maaser Sheni, but rather there's Maaser Ani. And he's giving Maaser Rishon to the Levi, and he's giving Maaser Ani to the Aniim, or to the Gabai of the Aniim. Alright, so Tosfot asks you a question. What happened to the Truma Gedola? Why isn't that mentioned over here? So Tosfot explains for two technical reasons why he didn't. The first of which is that the Chiyuv Truma devolves upon the items once you're in Mareach, when it's still out in the field. So he probably already took care of the Truma much earlier on. That's number one. Number two is Truma, Chita Achat Puteret Etakri. You can take off one little kernel and you've taken care of the Truma Gedola, and it's done through what we call Amud, that it's done on an estimated basis. You don't measure, when you take off Truma Gedola, you don't measure it, you just do it in an estimated basis, because we assume that you're going to have an Ayin Yafeh when you do that. When it comes to Maaser, you have to take off a very specific amount, and you have to measure exactly that it's 10% so that you get it right. That happens to be a machloket, whether that's actually true, but Maaser, but assuming that that distinction exists. So Tosfot says, by the Truma Gedola, because first of all, it happens earlier, he probably took care of it already. Number two is because he can do it in a simple manner, which is you can do it through estimation, and even the smallest amount discharges the obligation. He probably took care of it already easily, and that wasn't something that was residual or left over at this point in time. So that's why Tosafot claims that Truma is not mentioned over here. What you can say is that Truma might have been handled in a different manner, which is that it's so insignificant that he doesn't mention it, or later on in the Mishnah, which is not brought in our Gemara over here, Rabbi Yeshua, who's a Levi, has to be mafrish trumat maser from there and give it to a Kohen. So maybe in that process, the Truma Gedola also got captured and was given over there. So there are ways to get around the problem of Truma Gedola. Tosafot raises the issue that the Gemara Ketubot notes during Bayit Sheni when Bnei Yisrael returned, Shevet Levi did not join them on the way back. And therefore there was a knas imposed on the Leviim that they no longer received the Maaser Rishon. It was given to the Kohanim and not to the Leviim. So now Tosafot's faced with an issue here because over here Rabbi Gamliel is giving the Maaser Rishon to a Levi, to Rabbi Yeshua. So there are two ways to deal with that. One way to deal with that is he holds like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who has an opinion there in the Gemara Ketubot, that before the knas, dafka the Levi. For the knas, you could only give it to Levi. After the knas of Ezra, you could give it or to a Kohen or to a Levi. The knas didn't make it that you no longer could give it to the Levi, you only give it to the Kohen, but rather, you could give it to whoever you choose. Whereas before the knas, you could only give it to a Levi. So that means after the knas, you can still give it to a Levi, but you have now the right to also give it to a Kohen. There is another opinion over there, which disagrees with Rabbi Akiva, and says that after the knas, the Levi doesn't get it at all. It must go to a Kohen. So one way to deal with the issue is to say that it's according to that sheet of Rabbi Akiva that it can be given even to the Levi. The other possibility of dealing with it is to say Rabbi Yeshua is a Kohen and not a Levi. Now, the problem is that Rashi brings a proof from somewhere else that Rabbi Yeshua is actually a Levi because there's a discussion between him and someone else about you are, or your position, your job is to sing and not to work the doors. Leviim had two jobs in the Mikdash. One of them was to protect or guard the doors or the gates. The other one was to sing on the bringing of the Korbanot and the Nisach HaYayin. They had those functions in the Mikdash. The Leviim were split up. You had an assignment based on your family and based on your skill set as whether you were a singing Levi or a gate Levi. And in that discussion, someone says to Rabbi Yeshua, you shouldn't touch the gates here because you are a singing Levi, not a gate Levi. That would indicate, and that's Rashi's proof, that he is a Levi. But you could argue, and that's what Tosafot says over here, that we know that there were certain areas in the Mikdash where not only the Leviim guarded, but also Kohanim guarded. That's known from the Mishnayot, that the guards were not exclusively Leviim. There were some locations where Kohanim guarded. So possibly he could be a Kohen, and he could still be saying the same thing to him in that context. Why are they bringing this? They're trying to question what we said before about Omeid B'tzad Sadehu. So they bring this down and say, V'chi, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, B'tzad Sadehu, Rabbi Gamliel, Hayu Omdim? Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel were not standing by Rabbi Gamliel's fields. They're on the boat with him. And what does he do? He rents them the property. Later on in the Mishnah, again, we don't have this, what the Gemara brings down, but later on in the Mishnah, they pay him for it. They give him money for it and they buy it. So what are we assuming here is that they now have a chatzer, and their chatzer is kone on their behalf. So the mechanism for the kinyan here is kinyan chatzer. Yet, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva are all found on a boat. So there's nobody standing by the field to make it into a chatzer hamishtameret. So now our problem is, how did they acquire it? They now bought the area, or they rented the space. Now that they've rented the space, we're assuming that you have a kinyan chatzer. But a kinyan chatzer, according to you, can't work unless you're present, and they're not present. So how is he working over here? Amalei, domi hai mei rabbanon, delo gamrei inche shmaito. So Ula responds generically and says, this Rabbi Ava seems like he never knew how to learn. But he doesn't really know what's going on. The fact that he asked this question shows you that he doesn't know how to learn. So Ula obviously believed that the answer was very straightforward over here. And therefore, the question is based on a mistaken premise. And the answer is so easy that he doesn't understand why he's even asking the question. He doesn't even bother to answer him. He just says, this guy doesn't know how to learn. Kiata l'sura, so when Rabbi Abba got to Surah, Amarlu hachi amar Ula, v'hachi otvite. He says, this is what Ula said. Ula said you have to be by your field in order for it to acquire on your behalf. V'hachi otvite, and I brought this question from the Mishnah in Maaser Sheni. He's trying to understand. Ula rejected his question. But he still doesn't have an answer as to why Ula rejected his question. So now they give him the reason. Amalei Homi Rabbanan, one of the Rabbanan there explained to him why Ula rejected the question. Rabbi Gamliel, Metaltalei Agav Mikarkagene Hikale Alehem. The Kenyan is not a Kenyan Chatzer over here. It's a Kenyan Agav. A Kenyan Agav is when you are acquiring real property, real estate. Along with the real property, the real estate, the Mishnah and Kedushin tells us that you can also acquire metaltalin. And since you can make a kinyan on karka through money, when you use kesef, kesef is one of the vehicles of acquisition for a karka. Kesef, shtar, and chazaka are the three ways you can do it. So here, when they pay him the money to rent the property, they are making a kinyan on the property through the kesef. When they make a kinyan on the property, agav the property, the kinyan metaltalin comes along with it. So he says, you didn't understand that the kinyan here is not a kinyan chatzer, it's a kinyan agav. It's not that they own the property. Then once they own the property acquires it on their behalf. That's a kinyan chatzer, and you're right, that would fail here because they're not present. The kinyan here is that the process or the acquisition is being done by a kinyan over here. That kinyan can function for both the karka and the metaltalim simultaneously because a kinyan of real property, a kinyan of Dvarim Sheish Lehem Achrayut, helps things that have Shalom Achrayut, helps metaltalin automatically. And so that's the mechanism that's being used here, and it's not involving our question. Rabbi Zeira Kiba. Rabbi Zeira accepted this response, that Ula was right, and the Mishnah is not a question. Rabbi Abba Lo Kibla. Rabbi Abba, who's the one who questioned Ula, still did not accept that as the answer. He still believed his question was right, and this does not answer the problem. The reason as to why is, Amarova, Shapir Avid Lo Kibla. It makes sense that he didn't accept this answer, or he's right, or justified in not accepting this answer. V'chi lo yalem sudar liknot mimenu b'chalipin? Didn't they have a sudar, a handkerchief over there? And then they can use the handkerchief in order to execute on the transaction. What you're telling me now is that they're trying to acquire a metaltalin. There are different kinyanim when it comes to metaltalin. Metaltalin, we know, can be a kinyan hagbah, a kinyan mishicha. One of the kinyanim, one of the mechanisms for a kinyan by metaltalin is a kinyan chalipin. Kinyan chalipin, which comes out of Megillat Rut, which says that I can exchange some token item as being representative of the transaction, and when you make a kinyan on it, the other property or the other items move into my possession. So, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, could take out his handkerchief, hand it to Rabban Gamliel, a kinyan on the handkerchief, that moves the property to the possession of Rabbi Yeshua or to Rabbi Akiva. So why did they go through the bother of making a kinyan in this way to acquire the property, rent the property, and then through that acquire the metaltalin? If you're trying to acquire the metaltalin, there's a much simpler way to do that. That is a kinyan chalipin. Now Tosfot points out over here, the fact that he rented them the property shows you that he didn't use a kinyan chalipin, but also kinyan chalipin won't work by karka. I mean that, why does he rent it to them and then take money in order to execute on that rental? It shows you that a kinyan chalipin doesn't work for schira and sheila. Renting and borrowing, a kinyan chalipin is not effective. Kinyan chalipin is only effective in a sale situation, mekach umemkar, and it's metaltalin. But sheila v'schirut, eino niknet b'chalipin. Sheila and schirut don't work through chalipin. Again, this is Shita Tosfot in the Gemara in Kiddushin, and he backs it up by saying here, they didn't ask, why didn't he do a kinyan chalipin on the karka, or the schira, because that you can't do. The only question is, why didn't he do a kinyan chalipin on the metaltalin, which is the maiser? Why didn't he exchange it through a kinyan chalipin? The answer is, Ela, tovatana ena mamon, liknot mimenu b'chalipin. Tovatana is the right of the owner to distribute his trumot and masrot. The owner has no monetary ownership in the Trumot Masrot. Hashem already took that out of his possession and gifted it to the class of Kohanim or the class of Leviim. But when Hashem gifted it to them, he gifted it to the class. Which Kohen or which Levi amongst that class, that is not determined or predetermined. The owner has the right to make that determination. That right has some value. That right that has value, it's a question whether that right or that value is monetizable. I mean that when you have Tova Tana, is that right some intangible right? Or could you actually sell the right and monetize it and so it has monetary worth? What Rava says over here is Tova Tana Eina Mamon. That Tova Tana does not have monetary worth. Now you could formulate that in one of two ways in order not to avoid being caught in the machloket as to whether Tovat Hana is Mamon or not. Either he is saying that Tovat Hana is not Mamon. That's one possibility. It simply does not have monetary worth. It's an intangible asset. Or he could be saying, even though you can monetize it, it's not a value of enough significance to allow a kinyan chalipin. Because a kinyan chalipin is a weaker form of kinyan. It's a kinyan that allows you through representation to generate a kinyan. Therefore, you have to strengthen other parts of the scenario in order that the kinyan chalipin works. So if you have a deficit somewhere else in the kinyan chalipin will fail. So even though Tanat Tana might be monetizable, it's not a significant amount, and it's not yet monetized, and so therefore the kinyan chalipin won't function on it because it's a subpar asset. It's not your typical asset where you have a physical item that's there. And so because of that, the kinyan chalipin fails over here. So what Rava says is, I'll tell you why they didn't use a kinyan chalipin. They didn't use a kinyan chalipin because it would have failed over here. But you know what? If a kinyan chalipin fails, then so too, achanami tovat anayin mamon liknot agabe karka. Then the same thing will be true with kinyan agav. The kinyan agav will fail because the tovat ana does not have either monetary value or is not significant enough. Veloi, that's not the case. The Gemara rejects Rava's extrapolation of the din to say kinyan chalipin fails, therefore kinyan agav fails. Matnot kuna netina ketivu. The problem is that the matnot kuna, the matnot levi say that you must give it to them. There is a mitzvah of actually giving it. Not only do you have to separate it out, but there's a separate requirement in the Torah to hand it to them, to give them a netina. That has impact in terms of, number one, the quantity that you give them. The Mishnayot and the Gemara and other places determines that you have to give them a amount that is deemed to be a netina. It has to be significant enough that's considered to be giving. And number two is that you actually have to give it. There's a mitzvah to give it, not simply be mafrishit. Chalipin, derach, mekach, umemkarhu. When it comes to chalipin, chalipin is a mechanism of kinyan that works in transactions. It's not in lieu of handing an object to another party. It's in lieu of making a kinyan, so it functions in transactional situations. In a case where there's an obligation for you to give it, it can't do that. It can't step in and do the nitina. It can't do the giving or replace the giving because it's only a representative kinyan, not a real physical kinyan or acquisition over here. And therefore, it looks like mekach u'memkar and not a netina. So it looks like you sold it to him instead of giving it to him. Because the nature of the kinyan makes it like it's transactional rather than a gifting or granting of the item to the other party. Metaltalin agav mekarka netina alimtohi. When you acquire possessions agav mekarka, that is a full-fledged type of netina. Because now you've given it into his possession. He acquired the property, and he acquired the metaltalin. That is a netina. That is a giving of the object. By the way, just as an aside, today, where we're mafrish truma, when we take off trumot and masrot from items, and we're mafrish the truma, we don't give the truma to the kohen because of the issue of takala, and therefore we wait for it to go bad, we store it, and then we eventually throw it out with all the requirements of how you dispose of it. But what's interesting over here is that you actually lose out on the mitzvah of netina. The truth is that you could give it to the Kohen and have the Kohen keep it and make sure that it goes bad. Because then you would actually accomplish the mitzvah of netina even though the Kohen can't consume it because either he's tameh or it's tameh. But nevertheless, at least you would accomplish netina. So there might be something to be said for giving it to a Kohen as long as the Kohen understands what he's supposed to do with it and how to handle it. I'm assuming you don't do that because of the takala issue, but if you can find a Kohen who understands and knows what to do with it, maybe there's a value in giving the truma, even though he can't eat the truma, because the Torah says, Nitina is an integral part of Trumot and Masrot. It's not simply mafrish them, it's also giving of the items. So, the Gemara in the end rejects Rabba's claim over here, that the failure of a Kinyan Chalipin would also indicate a failure of a Kinyan Agav, because they're different. And since they're different, they accomplish different things. A Kinyan Chalipin creates a transaction that you can't back out of. It does not create a movement of the item from one party to the other. Kinyan Agav actually causes a movement of the item into your possession and generates a netina, which is what you need over here. And therefore, it would have been a good answer and now supports what Ula says. Ula says you need to be by your field to acquire it, By Rabban Gamliel, the reason that he didn't need to do it is because the kinyan was not a kinyan chatzer, it was a kinyan agav. And a kinyan agav doesn't require you to be present. Only a kinyan chatzer does. And a kinyan agav, where it worked over here, it's not a question of my position. Rapapa amar, dachdat acheret makneutan shiny. Rapapa now throws in another curveball into the situation and says, when there's a party granting a kinyan, there's a difference in the situation. Again, let's start with the best situation. The best situation is a chatzer ha-mishtameret, a chatzer that is guarded. There, your chatzer can work on your behalf to acquire. As soon as you have deficits, that it's not a chatzer ha-mishtameret, how can I make up for that deficit? Ula already told us, if you're standing by the field, that can compensate for the deficit of not being a chatzer ha-mishtameret, because your presence makes it as if it is a chatzer ha-mishtameret. So that's one way to make up the deficit. What Rapapa says is there's another way to make up for the deficit, which is dat acheret makneh. There's a difference between your acquisition of something that's hefker versus your acquisition of something from another party. When you're trying to acquire something that's hefker, then you need a full-fledged chatzer mishtameret to work on your behalf to acquire it, because there's no one granting you the kinyan. The kinyan is going to happen by itself. The fact that it happens by itself means that we need that higher standard of chatzer, chatzer mishtameret. On the other hand, if someone else is granting you the kinyan, the fact that they're involved in the process now can compensate for the lack of chatzer mishtameret. This person is granting you the item. So not only are you acquiring it, someone is trying to put it into your possession and get it into your possession. So that might be another way to compensate for the lack of chatzer mishtameret, which is a grantor of the kinyan. And what Rapapa says is, Ula's din only applies, number one, when the chatzer is not mishtameret. Number two, when there's no counterparty involved. When it's coming from hefker, like the case of Mitzia in the Mishnah, where you're trying to acquire something from hefker, there you need your either a chatzer mishtameret or you standing there. But in a case when someone is granting you the ownership, there you don't need chatzer mishtameret, there you don't need to be standing by the field to compensate for it. So that's what he says here. That's the situation by Rabban Gamliel. Gamliel's not a situation of mitziah. It's a situation where he's trying to move ownership from himself to the other party. And there a kinyan chatzer can work even without you being present. This is another way to compensate for the deficit of chatzer ha-mishtameret. And so that's the difference between this case in Maaseh Sheni versus our Mishnah over here. Umanat Temran, he says, I'll prove it from our Mishnah, the Tanan. Ra'a uton ratzin achara mitziyah. In our Mishnah, it says he sees them running after the mitziyah. V'amar Rabbi Yirmi, amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'hu shiratz achrayen umagiyan. That's only if he has the capacity to catch up with them. That's only if he has the ability to get them. Which means that what I explained in the Mishnah already, but now the Gemara is making it more explicit, when the animal is incapacitated somehow, or the birds can't fly, the fact is that he can now catch up with them. He doesn't actually have to catch up with them, but just his capacity or ability to catch up with them grants him the right to take possession of the item. As Rashi notes over here, that he could catch up with them before they exited his field. Then, by Rabbi Yirmiya, Rabbi Yirmiya poses a question based on that statement. What's the din by a matana? So you see, the fact that Rabbi Yirmiya is already asking a question about a matana shows you that he thinks the din might be different by a matana than by a mitziah. Kabla mine Rabbi Abba Bar Kana. Rabbi Abba Bar Kana accepted Rabbi Yirmiya's question and says, Afal pi shiratz achareihem einam magiyan. You're right, there is a distinction over here. And therefore, that requirement is only a requirement by a mitziah. But by a matana, there is no requirement that you have to be able to catch up with them. My daima. Why is there a difference between a mitziah and a matana? La mishum dedat acheret makneotan. Shiny. Because there's another party involved by a matana. By a matana, when they're granting you the kinyan, you don't have this extra requirement that you'd be able to catch up with them. In a case where it's a mitziah, it's coming from hefker, you need to compensate for the deficit of there being a makne by being able to catch up with them and acquire them. So what you see here is there is a distinction between case of matana versus a case of mitziah. So now we have established again, just to review, because we're gonna do one more stage in this, that you have three ways for your chatzer to work on your behalf. Either it's mishtameret, or you're standing by it, or dat acheret makneh. Someone else is passing the kinyan to you. In all three of those instances, your chatzer can work on your behalf to acquire. Now, Tosfot does ask over here, wasn't the masrot of Rabbi Gamliel in his house. The reason that he's chayav now is because he had miruach and riyat pnei abayit. So it means it's in his house. A house, by definition, the Gemara always says, is a chatzer mishtameret. Because a house, by definition, is closed and is protected. So why did they need a dat acheret matneh? Just say it's a chatzer mishtameret. Which goes along to your question that you asked before, which is, how do you know that it was an open field and not a chatzer mishtameret? So Tosfos in the end answers that, even though the bayit is mishtameret for Rabbi Gamliel, for the other parties, it's not mishtameret. Not that it's mishtameret from the outside. The problem is that there's no separation between their produce and Rabban Gamliel's produce. It's all found or contained in the same house. So vis-a-vis Rabbi Gamliel's possessions or tefuah, their tefuah is not separated or protected or distinguished in any way. And so therefore, it's not deemed to be a chatzer mishtameret because of that. That's how Tosafot deals with that issue. Now the Gemara is going to introduce a question, which is going to lead to us to another distinction here, which is Amir la Rav Simi la Rav Papa, Hari get the dat acheret makne ota. This goes back to your question that you asked in the beginning of this year. What about a get? By a get, the husband is granting the get to the woman. Va'amar ula v'hisho mede b'tzad beita o b'tzad chatzera. By the get, if the husband throws the get into her chatzer or throws it into her house, it only works if she is present and standing there. Wait a minute. You just told me that dat acheret makneh can overcome the deficit of chatzer mishtameret, and you don't need to be standing there. So how come over here, Ula is still demanding by the case of get that you be present or she be present when you give the get in order for chatzer to work on her behalf? Where it says, shani get, deite bal korcha. A get is different because it can be given against her will. So again here, you have a deficit of chatzer mishtameret. The field or the chatzer that she's in is not mishtameret. When the husband throws the get in there, it should not work because it's not mishtameret. Dat acheret makneh, we say can already compensate for that. So the fact that the husband's granting it should already compensate for the lack of chatzer mishtameret. The answer is here, it's different because you don't have two willing parties in this situation. The woman is a party who will receive the get even against her will. The kinyan can be forced upon her. So now, in order to overcome the problem of Bal Korcha, it's not enough that Dat Acheret Makneh. I need Dat Acheret Makneh plus Chatzer Mishtameret. So that's, I need to compensate even further over here, because Dat Makneh can't make up for the deficit because the acquiring party does not have to be a part of this, does not have to accept it willingly. It can be done against her will. So because of that, I need to make up for the deficit now. Dat makneh doesn't help me anymore. I need something else to help me out. I need the chatzer mishtameret, so I need to be sure to be standing there in order to compensate for the deficit of chatzer mishtameret. So matkiv la rav sheshet rav idi, v'lav kal v'chomer hu. Wait a minute, isn't it a kal v'chomer? Uma get de'ite bal korcha, iomere b'tzad beita, u'b'tzad chayitza in ilo lo. In a case where the get can be forced upon the woman, she doesn't have to be a willing acceptor of the get. Over there we say, if she's standing by the chatzer, it works. If she's not standing there, it doesn't work. Matana, demidate. A matana which requires the recipient to accept the gift. It requires him to acquiesce to the kinyan. Lo kol shekein. Certainly in that case, you should require that he be standing there. So you view this idea of bal korcha to be a deficit in the kinyan. Rav Sheshet, Brei Ravidi says, wait a minute. It's actually the other way around. It makes it easier. You can push this object into the other person's possession even without their acquiescence. So there it should be easier to get the kinyan into their possession. In a case where you have to give a matana and you need them to agree to accept, if they reject the matana, the kinyan doesn't go through, it's much harder to make a kinyan. So in a case where it's easier to push the kinyan through, you say she's got to be there, then kal v'chomer in a case where you're trying to generate a kinyan and the recipient party has to agree to it, certainly they have to be standing there in that case. That's the kal v'chomer. The truth is that there are many pirchot to this kal v'chomer. Nevertheless, it is a fair question, but the kal v'chomer is not as strong as he makes it out to be. There are ways to distinguish over here and to undermine the kal v'chomer. Ella Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, Chatzer itrabe mishum yad. The logora mishlichut. Chatzer has different aspects to it. A chatzer, or the way that a chatzer function, is mishum yad. That is a given, but it's lo gara mishlichut. It can't be worse than a situation of shlichut. Gabe get de chov hula. In a case of a get, where it's to her detriment, that's the sheet of the chachamim, that granting the get is to her detriment. Ein chavin ladam ela b'fanav. You cannot obligate a party except if they are present. So you need the person to be present in order for it to function and work on their behalf. On the other hand, zachin ladam shelo b'fanav. You can generate something that is to the benefit of an individual even if they're not present. So now what the suggestion is, by the case of get, I need the person to be present because that is a chova. And the way that the field or your chatzer works is, your chatzer acquires on your behalf. Your chatzer can act on your behalf. Now, if it's acting on your behalf, kiyat, then it doesn't matter whether you want it or don't want it. The Torah says it works. It says, v'natan b'yada, that you put it into her hand and it's done. If she's present and adjacent to her chatzer is functioning kiyada. And that's what Rashi says, Hilkach, ki omedet b'tzidah korcha yadahi. When she's standing by her field, that makes it into a yad, and yad works by get. That we know already. Because yad works by korcha. That's the whole limud in the Torah, the psukim in the Torah, tells us that she has to accept the get, even without acquiescence. And the way that she would accept the get is yadah. So once you make the chatzer into yadah, we have no question that it works. Because it's functioning as yadah. The problem is when she's not there. When she's not adjacent to her field, how is the field working on your behalf? It's working because of either, Tosfot's going to say zchia, that it's working to acquire on your behalf because it's a zchut for you. Zchia is mishum shlichut. Zchia works because it's functioning as your shliach, it's functioning as your agent. Well, an agent can be only work on your behalf, or the zchia can only work on your behalf if it's l'tovatcha. It's to your benefit, because then you want the shliach. Over here, it's not a shliach where you're appointing an agent, you're appointing a proxy. It's a case where the item, anansade, we think that you want it to act as your shliach because it's to your benefit to be your shliach. So that only happens when it is to your benefit. So when it's to your benefit, your chatzer will acquire even without the presence of the individual. Because over there, it's working mishum zchiyah. On the other hand, where it's lechovatcha, it's to your detriment, then the field cannot work on your behalf, because it's shlichut, but you don't want the shlichut because it's to your detriment, and therefore you can't press, or you can't force the get on the woman in that situation because of the failure of the shlichut. So now, again, in terms of compensating for the problem of chatzer mishtameret, in a case where it's mishtameret, chatzer works, because it's a chatzer mishtameret. I can make up for that deficit if the chatzer is not mishtameret by being present. If you're there, then you also make it into a quote-unquote, chatzer ha-mishtameret, and it will function just like a chatzer ha-mishtameret. I can also make up for that deficit by dat makneh, when there's another party that's granting the kinyan. Now, when another party is granting the kinyan, now I have to think about chatzer in a different light. Because when it's a chatzer ha-mishtameret, or you're present and you're there with the chatzer, that's yada, that's an extension of you, it's your yad functioning like you. The other hand, when you're not present and your chatzer is acting on your behalf, that's not because of yad, that's because of shlichut. When it's acting because of shlichut, there is a difference between whether it's to your benefit or to your detriment. In the case it's to your benefit, dak makneh can overcome the deficit of chatzer ha-mishtameret. Because number one, it's dak makneh. Number two is it's zchut. And therefore, your chatzer will work on your behalf to acquire it. On the other hand, when it's dak makneh making up the deficit or compensating for the deficit of chatzer ha-mishtameret, that cannot be made up when it's mechovatcha, it's to your detriment. Because over there, your field is acting, or your chatzer is acting as a shliach, and that shlichut will not go through, and you don't want it to work, because you don't want something that's detrimental to you. And therefore, your chatzer cannot work on your behalf through dat makneh, because dat makneh only works to overcome the deficit of chatzer mishtamer by creating a shlichut, or an anansade. That shlichut cannot be created when it's to your deficit. Right, so that's now how we explain all the different cases here. By the case of mitziah, you have a chaser she'ena mishtameret. You have a case where there's no dat makneh. Therefore, Ula says in our Mishnah that you must be present in order for it to act on your behalf. The case of Rabban Gamliel, you can overcome that deficit of them not being present when they acquired it, either by saying it was a kinyan agav, that's one way to do it, or the way Rav Papa suggests is dat makneh. You can overcome the problem there and say that it was a dat makneh and that overcomes the problem. By the case of get, there we said dat makneh doesn't work because it's bal korcha. The reason that Makneh doesn't work because it's Baal Korcha is because she's not present. It's not functioning like Yad. It's functioning like Shliach. And Shliach can't work when it's to your detriment. When it's Yad, the Torah says, yes, it can be done Baal Korcha. And if she's present or adjacent to her Chatzer, then it works like Yada, and we're done. It's over. The coextuition happens. But if she's not present, even though there's a Dat Makneh, it fails because of the fact that it is a Chova. And that's what Rashi says over here. On the top, Rashi, and you'd bet on Aleph, even without his knowledge. Because we will assume that he wants his field or his chatzir to act on his behalf, because it's to his benefit. Even he's not next to his chatzir. So therefore it's not considered to be an extension of him. So then the Zchia happens through shlichut. Just like another party, a third party can act on his behalf, even without his knowledge, to acquire something for him. So too the chatzer can do the same thing. The deficit by mitzia is that there's no dat makneh. Since there's no dat makneh, leke le'rubuya mishlichut. You can't have a shlichut without another party. Meaning that shlichut only works if you have an agent that's working on your behalf. Over here, you don't have anybody working on your behalf because there's nobody granting. There's no dat sholeach and mishaleach. So therefore, you gabi shlichut ika dat sholeach o dat shliach. Abachatzer leka lo dat sholeach v'lo dat shliach. There's no dat from the person who's granting it. There's no dat from the person who's accepting it. So you can't have a shlichut over here. You need some sort of dat to create the shlichut. Hilkach bein and dat acheret chatzer mishtameret. Therefore, you either need chatzer mishtameret, or you need dat acheret maknelo to compensate for those problems by mitzia. You can't have that, so either you're omeid by it, and that they have the capacity to catch up with them in order to compensate for the fact that it's not mishtameret, or it's a case where it is mishtameret. Now, Tosfot points out that by a get, the chov hula, that in a case where it's to a detriment, afilu b'mishtameret ena migdgareshet. Even if it's a chatzeir, a mishtameret, it won't work. The law adifa mishlichut, that it's no better than a shlichut. So Tosfot over here points out that even though chatzeir a mishtameret, we assume works by mitzia. We assume it works by the case of Rabbi Gamliel, by get it will fail. Because the get is being given baal korcha, and the way that a chatzeir a mishtameret works is through shlichut. And so therefore Tosfot makes the claim that chatzeir a mishtameret is no different than dat makneh, and it's only working through shlichut. And since it's working through shlichut, it fails by chatzer mishtameret. You could obviously argue on Tosafot and say that chatzer mishtameret is the equivalent of yad. Because chatzer mishtameret is an extension of the person because it's a secure location. Therefore, it's deemed to be an extension of them. Just like when they're adjacent to the field, it's also yad. So you could argue with Tosafot's assumption that chatzer mishtameret is mishum shlichut. But if you agree with Tosafot that chatzer mishtameret is mishum shlichut, it will fail by get because it's the chovata. It's now gufa. Ra'otan ratzin achara mitziyah, our Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'hu shiratz achareyem u'magiyan. We qualified that and said that it has to be that they have the capacity to catch up with them in order to make it into theirs. He doesn't actually have to do it, but he has to have the capability of doing it. Bay Rabbi Yirmiyah v'matana heich. What is the din when it comes to a matana? Kabla minei Rabbi Abba Barakana. Abba Barakana accepted Rabbi Yirmiyah's distinction, that is, the premise of his question, that matanah should be different. And he says, even if you can't catch him there, it'll work on your behalf by the case of matanah, because of dat acheret makneh. Bayi rova. Zerak arnaki bepetach zev yatsa bepetach acher mau. A person throws a wallet in this gateway and out the other one. He goes into his field through one entrance and exits the other side, never stops. Tosfot in v'yatsa bepetach acher points out, lo gar sinev afkere, that he was mafkirit. Whereas Rashi believes Arnaki vefkiru lehol hakodem, that he was mafkirit. Avir shein sovel anuach k'munach dami olo, something that will not automatically stop in your property, is that considered to be something that is munach or not munach? When you throw something through there, this is something that is in motion the entire time that it's going through there, and it's not physically touching the chatzer or the ground. So does that create an acquisition or not? So Amrei Rav Papa the Rova, the Amri Law Ravada Bar Matna the Rova, Amri Law Ravina the Rova, Lav einu matznitin. Isn't that our Mishnah? Ra oto ratzin achar mitziah. That they were running after mitziah. Ramiriam, Abriyokhanu, who shrats achareyam umagiyan. He has to be able to catch up with them. He has to be able to catch them. Ubay Rabbi Yirmiyah b'matana heyach. And then he posed the question with regards to matana. B'kebla minei Rabbi Yabar Barkana b'matana afu pishratzachem enim again. By matana, you don't have to actually be able to catch up with them. So it's a case where it's moving the entire time, and you're still able to acquire it. Not by a mitziah, but by a matana, even though it's in motion the whole time, you can acquire the object when it is in motion. By a matana, you don't need it to stop. So what they're saying to him is, listen, I don't understand what your question is. Rabbi Yirmiyah, who posed the question, and Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, who accepted that distinction, says by matana, afal pi shrat zacharim ein magian. Even though the animal's in motion the whole time, that doesn't make a difference. So you can't acquire it, even though it's never going to stop in your property, as long as there is a dat acheret makneh. Rashi believes that he was mafkirit. So then for Rashi, the proof is not from the matana case of the Mishnah, but rather from the Mishnah itself of Mitziah. And you see by Mitziah that you have to stop it in order for it to work. So according to Rashi, says the case is here is where he's mafkirit. And the question is, does the guy whose field it passed through acquire it? Or is it only when it lands afterwards anybody can pick it up? Or whoever's field it lands in, does they acquire it? So for Rashi, it's a question of hefker. The question they post to Rava on that is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, by Mitziah, you have to be able to catch it. You have to be able to stop it. And over here, you're not able to stop it. It's in motion the whole time. It's flying through. You can't catch it. So of course you're not acquiring it. That's why Rashi posed the question. Tosafot says it's a case where he wasn't mafkirit. It was a case of matana. And he's throwing it to the guy to be a matana. The question is, dat acheret makneh, do you need it to stop? And we have Rabbi Yirmiyah who says you don't. By matana, you don't need to be able to stop it, so you clearly should have been able to acquire it. In Amarlei, mit gagel kamart, you're talking about a case where it's physically touching the property. Shani mit gagel de kumunachtami. When it's rolling or moving through the property, that's different. Meaning that there's a difference between something that's in contact with the ground and moving through. If you have a tzvi that's running through your property, running on the property the whole way, that's different than an object that's airborne through the whole time going through. So for those of us, that means that a matana works without catching it because the object is in touch with the ground. And since it's in touch with the ground, you're able to acquire it even though it passes through your property because you have dat acheret makneh, it's your chatzer and it's touching the ground. On the other hand, when the guy makes it airborne through the whole space there, yes, you have dat acheret makneh. Yes, it's passing through your airspace, but it never touches your field. It never is kimunach dami, literally on the ground. It never touches the ground. And so there, I have a question. Does it work or does it not work? And the Mishnah will not answer my question. Or Rabbi Yirmiyah will not answer my question. Rashi, on the other hand, says that we're speaking about hefker over here. So our Mishnah is a case of where they're flying through. And ain't so fun than a niach. Yet we still say that he acquires them because he could have stopped them at some point along the way. So why not say the same thing by airborne? The answer is, shiny mitzgagel. That case is when they're touching the ground. So yes, they're not going to stop in his field naturally. And even though he could catch up with them and stop them, nevertheless, they're going to go in one end and out the other end. And there you say there's a kinyan. Rava says, that's fine because they were touching the ground the whole way. My case is where it's airborne the whole way, and therefore I can't conclude from the Mishnah that that means that you're acquiring from Hefker if you can catch up with the item. If you could stop it from when it's airborne, then that doesn't mean you necessarily would acquire it. And Rashi points out here that if anybody stops it, meaning that Rava has no question that if somebody in his field grabs it, that he automatically gets it. The owner of the field gets it, not the person who grabbed it, because once it enters his airspace and it stops, it's his. So if anybody stops it in his airspace, it will be his. The question here is, because it's airborne the entire way, does that have a status of kumunach dami? It's interesting here that the Gemara doesn't bring from the machloket in Shabbat by Akiran Hanacha that when we talk about something moving, an object moving, do you look at it as an object that's continuously in motion and therefore there's an akira in the beginning and anacha at the end? Or do you look at it as a discrete movement, which is you have an akira and anacha every moment of the way? And that's really the nature of Rava's question over here. Something that's airborne, do you view it as being discrete motions along the way and therefore it's kimunach dami in the interim? Or do you view it as one motion and therefore it left here and landed there, whatever happened in interim has no bearing on the case? And truthfully, it should be similar to that case in Shabbat, that the Gemara doesn't bring that to discuss Rava's case over here. All right, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph.